right. Hey, everyone. This is Jerry Fabianic on KYGT LPFM 102.7, 103.9, coming at you live here from the center of the universe. And that, of course, that is Clear Creek County, Colorado, and home of historic Georgetown. And if you haven't been to Georgetown yet, you need to get there. Bighorn Sheep Festival coming up here shortly in a week. Christmas market, first two weekends in December. So by all means, come and enjoy the town, the ambiance, the culture. Oh, it is a hoot. So, and I want to thank the folks in Georgetown for helping sponsoring this program and others along the way. And in this particular hour, though, I will be sponsoring it, and that is me, Jerry Fabianic. And I have my workout, Sisyphus Wins, and you can learn more about that by going to my website, jerryfabianic.com. And this is The Rabbit Hole. And on The Rabbit Hole, we have special features here called Writer's Talk. And I'm really excited. We have two fabulous authors in the studio right now. One was with me right now is Ronnie Lambert. So, Ronnie, you want to test that mic and make sure it's all working real nice and purdy?
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, and how are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you bet. Okay. And we're going to be talking about parenting and so forth like that, too, as we go along here. So, before we do, again, I want to thank all our sponsors, because without our sponsors, community radio like this is not possible. And, and we're having these great programs, and this program is being recorded, and I'll have it up on my website. Then go to that, jerryfabianic.com. Just go to the drop down Writer's Talk, and you'll see Ronnie's book. And you just click on that, and you're going to learn, hear Ronnie and learn more about her as we go through. So, all right. And, Ronnie Lambert, was just a typical wife and mom from Castle Rock, Colorado, working long hours to make ends meet when her entire world changed in a split second. Her beautiful son, Dalton, left for heaven just after Christmas in 2013 due to injuries from an AT versus a sandrail accident. Her son, Dalton, lived his short life creating smiles, laughter, and happiness by sharing his kind spirit and helping others through tough times. Ronnie and her husband, John, now continue his legacy by practicing random acts of kindness in Dalton's memory each day. They also help other parents live in the moment with their own children by sharing their truths about regret and finding beauty in everyday chaos of family life. Ronnie has several books out, including Parenting at Your Best, Powerful Reflections and Straightforward Tips for Becoming a Mindful Parent, A Parent's Guide for Journaling to Their Child, Simple Strategies for Writing Heartfelt Love Letters to Your Child, A Parent's Journal to Their Child with Simple Strategies for... And I'm sorry, I already did that. And these books, of course, are available on Amazon and on Ronnie's website, and we'll come back to that, in a little bit there, and also about that. So again, Ronnie, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and, it's under difficult circumstances that you put this work together.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you say you were just a typical mom and so forth. So you live in Castle Rock still?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And in your day life, what do you do?
Oh, boy.
Busy,
do a lot of things. Yeah, uh-huh. I'm a realtor full-time. I also do loan documents and loan closings. And my husband has a remodeling business, so I do all of his bids and a lot of his grunt work, caulking and grouting and all kinds of fun stuff. And anyway, and then also the book. So five businesses in one.
Okay. So, the amazing part is then the fact that, like you say, everyday person, the vast majority of us can identify with this. And in a split second, in a heartbeat, something totally upends your life. You experienced that.
We did. We did. It's definitely a learning experience I wish no one in the world would ever have to go through.
Yeah, and
yes.
How many other parents can connect with that?
Yeah,
yeah. And I
so many. It seems we're meeting so many that have lost their children, and in fact, many who have also lost their only child. So, it's amazing what you run into.
And when you're meeting these people, meeting them, under what circumstances, do you talk about your work? You go out, you give little talks. What's that setting like?
You know, it just depends on where I'm speaking. It could be at a book club of current parents who are just reading my book to better their parenting methods. It could be with a group of parents who are grieving the loss of their child and trying to figure out what their next steps are. You know, it's so hard. I read probably 150 grief books right after we lost Dalton, and, you know, and all of that, trying to figure out how do you go on with your life. And, you know, in all those books I read, there's not one single book that walks you through putting your feet on the floor, you know, when you get out of bed in the morning and going to the restroom and taking a shower and brushing your teeth and how to put your clothes on. I had to be kind of retaught all of those things. Hmm. And it's amazing what you lose in a moment like that when the PTSD really, I mean, it hits you instantly and takes so much away from you. So you do have to relearn everything. And I would tell you that short-term memory with a lot of these families, short-term memory is pretty much gone forever. It's, if I don't write it down, it ain't happening.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's to this day, and that's like 4 years ago.
Yeah, 3 years, mm-hmm. 10 months. Yeah.
Okay. And Ronnie, when you first experienced it, you said, you know, you read like 150 books.
Yeah.
Okay. And what it seems to me, what you're touching on, is something that I think we often miss, and that's the day-to-day stuff.
Yeah.
So we can read books on grief. You know, if we read, for example, Kubler-Ross's on the five stages of grief. You know,
which is total joke.
Well, you know, and there's a lot to, but you know, you to move through that. But then it's the simple things that are not taken care of in there. You know, that come to acceptance. But you know, that day-to-day stuff, going to work, like you say, doing laundry, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and the memories associated with all of those things. The doing the laundry. I have a story in the book about doing laundry with Dalton every Sunday and how important it was then. I knew it was special time for us to do laundry together, you know, fold the clothes after you pull them out of the dryer. But when it's over, you don't realize how incredibly important those moments were, that we got to put socks together and, mm-hmm. Just fold all the laundry together. And I work on, when I'm speaking to parents who currently have children or who are going to have children, I think one of the things I really do focus on is making sure that they really cherish those little moments, the mm-hmm. making dinner together, doing dishes together, vacuuming together, dusting together, all those little things around the house that you do, driving in the car and singing together, or driving to school, any of those things, going to the grocery store, just all the little things, because you don't realize really until it's all gone how incredibly important all those moments were. And so many people are so focused on the big trip to Disney World or going to a wedding in the summer or, you know, all different kinds of events, and they're forgetting that it is really about the journey. And, you know, I really didn't believe that quote until this all happened with our son, but it is really all about the journey, and it really has nothing to do with the destination. It's all about what you do on a day-to-day basis and how much time and quality relationship building that you do. It's so important.
And, you know, and you mentioned, you know, like the laundry and putting a meal together. The idea that came to mind for me when you said that, Ronnie, was these little triggers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That provoke. And
Very much so.
And what are those, you know, like in particular, like with you, with Dalton, and then, you know, you've talked to all kind, you know, lots of parents mm-hmm. who have experienced what you have experienced. What do you hear from them about these triggers that, you know, because just in a heartbeat, you're just there again, or this brings it up?
Yes. Most people talk about music. You know, music is the truest form of communication, I think. And so you hear a lot of people talk about that music, you know, they'll hear a song that helps remind them of their loved one or that kind of a thing. Which is also true with us. Music was a huge and still is a huge part of our lives. But I'll tell you, it is the little things. It's the first day that I had to pull the laundry out and go throw it on our bed and organize everything. That was huge for me. The fact that I had to do that alone And there's been a lot of tears since then. I still try and do laundry. I've split it up now. It's not every week now. I probably do that every third or fourth Sunday. And I turn the TV on really loud or the music on really loud. And then I talk to Dalton as if he's sitting on the bed folding socks.
Okay.
For me. But it is. It's all those little things. You know, when you get home from the grocery store and you clean all the vegetables and the fruit, that was something we always did together. When you watch a certain TV show, one of his favorites was House, that medical TV show. He loved that show. And so a rerun of that comes on will, you know, trigger something. Or I'll be sitting in my office and get a little jolt from behind and I feel like, oh, he must just got home from school and I'm going to turn my chair around and he's going to sit on my lap. Just all different things. And then the other thing is too, I would tell anybody who has lost someone to watch for dimes. They say that dimes come from heaven every day and, Dalton leaves us dimes quite a bit and just to let us know. And then there's other little things too. Like I see my birthday on the clock more, or, last night we were at an event and I went to pay for something and the guy says, oh, that'll be $7.17. And that's my birthday. And that's kind of one of my signs that Dalton gives me. So, and while all of those things are little events that kind of give you a jolt, they're also triggers to make you remember that he's not here, mm-hmm. but he is kind of here. So we just have to mm-hmm. cherish all of those.
Well, you know, if you're feeling his energy, his spirit, and so forth, and his connection there,
yes.
and just send you those little, like, 717, you
exactly.
know?
Exactly.
And it's like, okay, this is not exactly coincidental.
Exactly. You know, yeah, how could I look at the clock at 717 twice every single day? And how could it have just rung up that, you know, that bill was 717? But, yeah.
And I have a dear friend who lost her son. He was a little bit older.
So
he's in his early 20s. And it was in a climbing accident. It wasn't like he was on the face of El Capitan. It was actually up in Chautauqua Park in Boulder. And he just happened to slip and hit his head, and there was no one around. And so a very similar type of experience in the way. It's just sudden there, and then she gets the phone call, hey, we just found him. What do you do? And so her philosophy is this moving from grief to purpose.
Yes, very true.
And how does that resonate with you? It's probably the first time you've heard that line, I'm assuming. But, you know, when I say it to you, moving from grief to purpose, what's that mean?
Oh, boy. I will still tell you today that both my husband and I try and find the reason that we're here every day. You know, you ask yourself the whys constantly. You ruminate in why. Mm-hmm. Which they do say that some of that is healthy. But I also think that finding purpose, trying to find a reason to get up in the morning, as you'll hear Cheryl a little bit later, she's one of my very close friends, and we talked yesterday about, you know, how do you get out of bed every morning? And one of the things that we do religiously is plan our appointments with clients for first thing in the morning mm-hmm. so that it forces us to get out of bed because someone else is depending on us.
Okay.
And I would say that's it's very important for us to do that, because if I don't have an appointment in the morning, boy, I could stay in bed all day and sulk and find the dark side and all that kind of stuff. So we do really force ourselves to be busy all the time. And as you heard before, I have 5 different jobs that I do every single day. And I truly, we work about 18 hours a day. And I think we worked a lot before Dalton passed away, but I think we work a lot more now only because we have to be busy. So, and in being busy, we also have to find purpose. And one of the ways that I have found purpose almost immediately after Dalton passed away was but his friends were telling us so many things that had happened that we didn't know about previous to that. And I think it was 6 of his friends actually stood up at his life celebration and told us that they wouldn't be here had Dalton not stopped them from committing suicide. And while Dalton talked to us a lot about everything, we didn't know that he was kind of the counselor for his friends. And one of our favorite family movies is Pay It Forward. And so we kind of took that idea and like what you read in my bio, and we created these little business cards and they're called Pay It Forward cards. And we ask everybody, and it wouldn't have to be in Dalton's memory, but in anyone's memory or for any reason, just perform a random act of kindness for someone every single day for the rest of your existence. And that helps so often. That helps someone in a really dark place, and you have no idea what an impact you made on their life. And so it's very important, I think, to do that. And that's another one of the talks that I give. I go around to schools and speak to students about performing random acts of kindness and doing nice things for other people. There's a story that at Dalton's Junior High that one of the kids had called us right before Dalton's service, and he said, "Can I speak at Dalton's funeral?" And I said, "Well, yeah, absolutely. We'll have microphones up and all you kids can speak." And he said, "Well, I want to tell you a story." He said, "I'm in the IEP program at school, and most people, you know, don't like me very much, and they think I'm kind of a geek and all these things." And he said, "And I had just started at the school, and I'd been there about a week, and nobody had paid any attention to me, and I never had any place to sit for lunch." And he said, like on the fourth or fifth day of school, that Dalton had gone up to him and said, "Hey, you know, it looks like you need a place to sit. Why don't you come sit at my table with my friends, and I'll introduce you to everyone." And that was something Dalton had never told me. You know, you think as a mom, your kid tells you everything, but he never told me all the wonderful things that he had done. And that was one of the big things. And that child, Cameron, said, had Dalton not done that that day, he said, "I think Dalton saved my life that day. Had he not done that, I don't know that I would be here." And that is just so amazing. And so we felt that it was so important to kind of spread that message and help other people learn about random acts of kindness and how far they can take it. And in fact, Dalton School, a couple years in a row, did a Pay It Forward month in April, because that is Pay It Forward month. And they handed out Dalton's cards, and they taught these kids that you can start something one day and it can instantly reach Chicago or Iraq or Japan or Germany or France or, you know, anywhere, California and Texas and, you know, all these different places. And these kids kept a map, and they realized that one act of kindness spread that hugely. And it's, I think it's so important that we teach our kids that, as well as adults. Adults need that reminder too. But so that's one of the things that we've found purpose in. And then another thing was writing these books.
Yeah. Yeah. That's huge right there, because it's a, you know, it's one thing to, and very important, like you were saying, pass out cards, but this book is forever, and it literally gets into people's hands. And this had to be a challenge for you, I would think, you know, to do it. And yet you move forward with it. Again, grief to purpose. What then prompted, what made, you know, caused you to say, you know what, I'm going to do this?
Well, there's a couple different things. First, I've been very open on Facebook with friends and family about our journey. And I had written, I wouldn't call them blogs, but whatever, just Facebook posts about things that we were going through, things that were happening and how we were feeling or that kind of a thing. And people had written back and said, "Wow, I never knew that someone would go through this," or "I never knew that this would happen," or "Wow, what you said really resonated with me. And I haven't spoken to my son in 5 years, and I made a phone call today and rekindled that relationship because of what you said." And then a lot of people also came back and said, "Wow, you should take all this stuff and write a book, because it would be so helpful for everyone, not just, you know, just those of us watching you go through your journey." So, and in fact, even something I posted yesterday, somebody came back and said, "Ronnie, you've taught me so much about being a human being." And I thought, wow, that's incredible. So I took a lot of that and put it in the book, but as well as the fact that my husband, John, he's, as we started out on this journey, he had a lot of regrets, you know, as, and I think as dads, maybe that happens quite a bit, where a father thinks, maybe that they need to work more or do more, or that they should do things by themselves to get things done faster, that kind of thing. And so Dalton spent most of his time with me. But there in the end, he was out in the garage with John quite a bit, or mowing the lawn or doing whatever needed to be done. But one of John's things that he said was, "I never played baseball with Dalton." I'm like, "I bought you a baseball bat and a glove and a ball and all that, and he never picked it up either. So he didn't want to play baseball." But I can tell you that probably most of the baseball fathers and sons out there probably don't ride ATVs, and their kids probably don't know how to change the spark plugs and the oil and the tires and all those things, which was something that was very important to Dalton. So we work with John a lot, trying to turn turn those regrets around and make sure that he understands that he shouldn't have any regrets. But we do, just innately as human beings, we all have regrets about certain things. So one of John's comments to me was, I wish there was a way that we could tell parents just to do all these things that I didn't get a chance to do, and give them some tips on that kind of a thing, so that nobody who ever loses their child in the future would ever have to go through that. And so I took all that, and then I took all the comments from Facebook and decided, well, I'll try and figure out what I can do and what kind of things I would want to write about in the book. So I came up with 30 different chapters of different things I think we've done right, and then also a lot of things I think we sucked at. Because you know what? Every parent is, we're all first-time parents, whether we have one kid or we have 25 kids, we're all first-time parents because every kid is different. So no matter what, you're a first-time parent, and you're learning right along with your kid, and I think it's important for us as parents to be honest with our kids and let them know, hey, I'm learning too. So just like you're learning how to be a kid, I'm learning how to be your mom, you know, or your dad. So, so I took the 30 chapters and really just tried to give tips that I thought were really important for parents to know and remember. And again, things we did right and things we really weren't good at. So,
yeah. And I would just encourage both you and John, you know, it's really interesting because one of my philosophies of life is never have regrets.
Right.
And you touched on it, and yet we often do.
Yes.
But the only way you learn is to do some things that are not, and so you can say, okay, I've learned a lesson here. So I think then your message, which we want to get into here with your book, you say 30 different ones, a large part of that is built upon regrets. If you did everything perfectly, you wouldn't have as powerful a message, you know.
Yes.
But because you're right, no one is perfect. And my mother had 13 children.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. And, you know, so it's kind of like the snowflake thing. And, you know, I always joke because it took her 11 to get it right, you know.
Because you're number 12?
No, I'm the 11.
You're the 11th one. Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, and that whole experience of growing up and everything. And you're right. And every parent can testify. You have more than one kid, and there's not two alike. And so what worked with one doesn't work with the other.
Exactly.
You mentioned the baseball glove, and he looked at it and said, well, thank you very much, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But I want to do something else.
Yeah, I want to ride an ATV or play chess or whatever.
Exactly.
It might be.
Or play my guitar or whatever. Yeah.
But I'm intrigued about the book, though, because you say, like, you have 30 different, that's a lot. What are the topics? I mean, you go through them. You want to do a reading from, I'm going to leave it up to you now to say, this is what's in the book, and here's some key points.
Okay.
What do you think?
Yeah, I'll read an excerpt, and then we can kind of go through some of the other little things.
Sure.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. So chapter 7 is called, Do You Hear What I Hear? From the time we bring them into this world, our children are trying to communicate with us. With the first cry, the first smile, the first giggle, the first time they tell us no, and every breath in between. They want us to see and hear them and simply acknowledge their existence. Oftentimes we hear them speak, and before we have even listened to their complete thought, we begin coming up with a solution. I was really good at this. So we begin coming up with a solution, cure, or a teaching moment, when all we really needed to do is listen to them and really hear what they have to say. Even though we may think that they are saying what they are saying or doing is unimportant because it has to do with something minor, like coloring a picture or someone taking their toy when they have 10 others to play with, we need to remember that those things are what's important in their lives right at that particular moment. They don't always need our advice. In fact, more often than not, they just need to be heard. If we actually take the extra few minutes to stop and listen, we may find that just letting them tell us what's on their mind allows them to work through it themselves. I was a pro at coming up with a solution before Dalton ever stopped talking. He would get so frustrated with me that he'd stomp off before I was finished giving him my brilliant advice. I'm sure you can imagine the frustration this caused between us. He'd be mad that I didn't listen all the way through, and I'd be mad that he didn't want to hear my brilliant motherly advice. Straightforward tips for parenting at your best. Stop and listen until they are completely finished with their thought, and ask yourself, are they asking me a question, or are they just asking to be heard? Then acknowledge what they said by summarizing their words back to them. For example, if I understood you correctly, you said, ... Stop to help them at that moment, or if you're in the middle of something else, actively schedule a time with them to handle the issue within a short period of time. When Dalton was little, he told me a short period of time to a kid is less than 30 minutes. I'm sure he had no idea how much time that really was, but he knew it felt like a long time.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder, Ronnie, when if you would read that in front, which you might have, in front of a group of parents, adults, and children,
yes,
and say, okay, raise your hand if you can identify with this, that as a parent, you finished your child's thought, and as a child, you got frustrated. And I bet it was 100% of the hands that went
up. Oh, absolutely. Yes. So true. So true. And I look at my upbringing and I think, my mom always finished my thoughts for me. So I come by it naturally. No. But I think we all go through that. I think as parents, we're so busy with life and we're so busy with work and everything is so overwhelming all the time. And I think everybody you talk to, not just parents, but every person you talk to these days is so overwhelmed with trying to afford the place to live and a place to buy groceries and, you know, all these kind of things. And I think we get so caught up in the moment of trying to create money and not enough time for everything. And we're trying to hurry along all the people in our lives when really that's what we should be slowing down on, mm-hmm, and really focusing on.
Yeah. And I want to remind our listening audience, this is Jerry Fabianic on KYGT LPFM 102.7, 103.9. This is the Rabbit Hole Writers Talk on the Rabbit Hole, visiting here with Ronnie Wing Lambert and talking about your work, Parenting at Your Best. Okay. Because we don't want to talk about parenting at your worst.
There's some of that in here.
and I want to get into that there as well. And I just want to remind everyone, I'm sponsoring this particular portion of the program, and you can learn more about my work at jerryfabianic.com, and that's Sisyphus Wins is the name of that novel. But right now we want to focus on Ronnie, and so Ronnie, and the title is interesting. We quipped about it because we want to win Parenting at Your Worst, but this, I think this book, when I've read through it, is not just for parents. I'm not a parent, but I was a teacher for, you know, more decades than I care to remember. But I do remember, and I loved it. I really do. And I always tease the children that, yes, I was here when dirt was new and God was a child, and, you know. So, but I found so many, you know, as a teacher, so your audience is not just parents, I would take it then.
No, I think, in all honesty, it's funny. I would say, in general, when I wrote the book, I thought, well, you know, parents-to-be, and parents, and grandparents, and aunties, and uncles, and teachers. But it's funny, with the reviews that I've received since then, I've had a lot of people say, wow, you should take this and turn it into a business book. Or, wow, you should just take this and turn it into a marriage book, or just a relationship book in general. And I even had one comment, someone said, do you know, I learned more about relationships in this book than I have from anywhere in my life. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. Because I think so many of these things, they carry over to so many different areas of your life. And it is just simple things. You know, one of the chapters is called Speak Up, and it's about not speaking up like loud, but speaking up, like making sure that we talk positively to, mm-hmm, our kids, our students, our family, our friends, our neighbors, anybody, that we speak positively to them. And I'm not saying let's, you know, give them all kinds of accolades. I'm just saying, when you say something like, for example, instead of saying don't forget, say please remember.
Yes.
But
put
turn
it in the positive.
Exactly. So just turning things around and making them positive, which I think in my entire life is something that I've really been trying to do in general. And with losing Dalton, that's something that we've really been trying to do a lot too, is, you know, I could really focus on every day. I could focus on, wow, he was 15. He didn't even get his driver's license. He didn't get to go to prom. He didn't get to go to the Marines. You know, he didn't get to get married. I'll never have grandchildren. Yeah, I could focus on all of those horrible things, and that could really take me to a dark place. But I choose to speak up to myself and speak up to those around me and really focus on the positive things, and how lucky I am to have such an amazing husband and family and support system and beautiful friends and neighbors, and most importantly, how lucky we were to have Dalton for those 15 years and 8 months and 3 days and 15 hours.
Yeah.
We are so lucky to have had him, and we have to count those blessings every day.
You know, and it's two broad thoughts that came to mind when you were describing that, Ronnie. And one is about the necessity and power of relationships themselves.
Yes.
Okay. And so I want you to talk about that. you know, in terms of, you know, when people have encouraged you and say, hey, turn this into a business book or whatever, and as to why, and get into that there. The other thought that came to mind is, in despite the horrific experience and everything, you've also been given a gift.
Correct.
And you are paying that gift forward here in that way. But let's talk about that, you know, like relationships. What, you know, this is so powerful for me to, you know, people will come back and say, wow, I've learned more about relationships reading this book, and I might not even be a parent, for example,
right,
and get it.
In fact, the gal who wrote that said she's just a dog parent.
Oh, and it helped her listen to her, you know.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
It's true, because it's a relationship with the dog, too.
Yes.
But, yes. But,
exactly.
Yeah, please.
So, you know, in fact, Jerry, in your book, Sisyphus Wins, when I read that, I thought a lot about your relationships in your book and what you've gone through and how you've morphed yours into a positive outcome and that kind of a thing. And I think, I just think it's so important that we really focus on our relationships and not so much focus on forcing the relationships that we think should be there. So in your example, that your family wasn't accepting of you at first, mm-hmm. okay, when
yes.
you came out. So was it really important that you focus on making them happy? Or is it more important that you focus on the people who are here in your surroundings and who support you every day and love you? And I think in general, as people, so many times we focus on the family who maybe doesn't accept us for who we are, or the friends or the coworkers or the boss who doesn't accept us for who we are. And I think it's so incredibly important to take what we do have, and I think we're always trying to fix what's negative,
yeah.
but instead of doing that, let's nurture what's already positive. Let's focus on the people that are good in our life and focus on the people who feed us and feed them right back. You know, there's another chapter in my book about feeding the people you love. And I think that's so important that we're consistently feeding relationships. We're feeding our, not our egos, but our just feeding each other good, happy thoughts. You know, if you've got somebody who's, say you've got a plate of food and you've got somebody who's constantly eating all your food and they're never replenishing it, then you're going to starve. So why not have that plate of food and share it with the people who you love and who you know that, okay, well, if they took a muffin off my plate, then they're probably going to replace that with a cookie. And if they took salad off my plate, maybe they're going to replace that with fresh vegetables. You know, and while that's a goofy metaphor, it's an idea in life in general, not just in parenting, but relationships with your boss, with your coworkers. You know, if you work at a dead-end job and your boss is a jerk every day, you know what? I am a firm believer that life is too long to put up with that. People will say all the time, life is too short. I will tell you with Dalton, life is far too long for us. But you look at those things and I think now the people that kind of fell out of our lives when we lost Dalton because they didn't know what to say or how to react. And I don't blame them for that. I get it. I wouldn't know what to say or do either because there's nothing you can say to make it right. But I also know that I don't spend my time worrying about them. I spend my time focusing on the people who have been here and who have supported us and the friends who need us now. You know, we have a friend who is currently in the hospital and needs our support right now. And I think it's important that we're feeding each other because when we were down and going through all of this with Dalton, they were the ones that brought us food and, you know, all the things that we needed. And so we need to turn around and we need to pay that forward and either pay it back to them or pay it forward to someone else. So we just consistently need to be feeding the relationships that feed us.
Right. And it is balance in a relationship. And I used a metaphor of gift giving. Well, everybody loves to give a gift.
Yes.
But the other end of that is you need a receiver.
Yes.
And because part of the joy of giving the gift is the joy of the person getting it and say, thank you. Oh, wow. What a great. And then we get that back from them.
Yes.
But if there isn't someone to receive the gift, then there's not a job for givers, right?
Exactly.
And so, and what ends up happening too often in life is that we have certain people that are always giving, 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 and to the, you know, where it becomes self-sacrifice.
Yes.
And so they do deplete themselves. And, you know, so to explore that and say why, well, maybe because they don't think they're worthy to receive. That's the other end of it, too.
Yes.
And so when you see someone who is very generous with her time and, you know, whatever it might be, and outreach to turn around and do something nice back for her, for him, you know, just to say, you know, it's about time you somebody did something nice for
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. That's part of that paying forward, I
yes.
would think, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, and in your chapter, and I'm spacing the last one out because you had mentioned a couple. You said about there was a negative thing, you're parenting at your worst, but there was another one too right before. But you know, with the but you know, offer other. I'll just put it that way. I'll let you offer other tidbits of wisdom here.
Okay. You know? Well, one of the other things, my last chapter actually is called "Best Laid Plans," and I think as parents of who have lost a child. We've had friends who have lost children to suicide. We have friends who have lost children in accidents, just like we did, that kind of a thing. But and then other friends who are going through kids who are on drugs and they can't get them out of that cycle and that kind of a thing. And one of the things in my chapter, Best Laid Plans, that we talk about is how important it is to, as parents, we need to give our children responsibility. We want them to be responsible, right? So when they get straight A's, who do we give all the credit to? Mm-hmm. We always give it to the kids.
Yeah.
We're always, oh, we're so proud of you, and oh, you ran that touchdown, and oh, you did all these things, or you got the home run, or you played that solo perfect, or whatever. And we give them all the credit for that. But when something happens and they do something wrong, they get into drugs, they get pregnant in high school, they... I don't know, just anything. They do
sure.
something wrong. We as parents, somehow, we turn around and we take all that on, put all that on our shoulders, and we forget that, hey, they had a responsibility in that. And I think it's so important. And so oftentimes, I hate to say this out loud a lot, but I went through a time last year, it was June of 16, where I kind of thought suicide was my only option because I didn't think... being here without Dalton was a logical place to be. And I will tell you that being in that spot, I hear so many parents talk about, oh, my child committed suicide and I don't know what they were thinking and what did I do wrong and what did I miss? And, you know, all of these kind of things. And I think about the moment that I was in that I almost took my own life. And I think about, that being in that moment, and I never once thought about my husband. Well, this is terrible to say, but I didn't think about my husband, and I didn't think about my parents, and I didn't think about my sister and all the people who love me. All I cared about in that very moment was stopping the pain, making things not hurt so bad. And so I would tell, if I could give the parents of a child any relief that had committed suicide, it would be to tell you that you didn't do anything wrong. It was something that they had a little glitch in their brain, and it probably was for a split second or 2 minutes, and they just made a wrong choice at that moment, or the choice that was meant for them, and it wasn't about you. You have to give them the responsibility on their own that they made that choice. They did that on their own. And, cause I know, and I know everybody's circumstance probably isn't the same, but I would just tell you that in my circumstance, I truly was not thinking about anyone else. I just didn't want to hurt anymore. And I think that I put on a really good facade a lot, and you'll see me smile all the time. And most people who know me will always see me smile. But when we go home and the lights go out and it's dark or it's quiet for 5 minutes, that's a very dark time. And it could very easily happen again. But I'll tell you, it's so important that we give our children, if we're going to give them all of the accolades for all the great things they do, we also have to give them the accolades for the bad things that they do and not take responsibility for everything on our own, because we didn't make them choose that. And so, while we can say, oh, wow, we created a great kid and he went into the Air Force and he got straight A's and he did all these great things. Or we can say, you know, my kid started on drugs. I don't know what I did wrong, you know. And it's not what you did wrong. It's the choices that they made. So.
And it's a couple, yeah, in that, Ronnie, because and thank you. Wow, that's a powerful story. And because I think when you tell that truth about you, you're not alone. How many others out there have felt and feel the same way at some point?
Right. I think you even talk about that in your book, right?
I did.
Yes,
I
you did.
Yes, ma'am. And
did you feel the same way?
Absolutely.
Like you weren't even thinking about anybody else around you. It was right there in that moment. You're in that box, and you can't see any further than that darkness.
Exactly. And you feel alone. You're separate from. And, you know, so put it in context, because the difference for you and I, for you and me, compared to kids, is our maturity and brain growth and so forth. Kids are impulsive.
Yes.
And they do dumb stuff. Adults do dumb stuff, but, you know, but it's just because they just simply react. And so your point also is well taken about, well, when they do something stupid and something like that, you know, it's like, okay, so what triggered that in the first place there? And because it's an area I want to move into there, you know, with our time, is that talk about, you know, in this day and age right now with social media.
Yes.
We've been talking about teenage suicide, you know, and the number of students, oh my gosh, that are young people who shared with their stories about how Dalton probably helped them save their lives.
Yes.
Because he had that positive energy, that outreach, that love, that caring and everything too, who thought outside of himself and embraced them. So the little boy who felt ostracized because he was a special ed student or whatever it might be, and Dalton was able to bring him into that realm, into, you know, to make them feel accepted there. But with social media, and you told me a story about being in a restaurant with a family. Mm. I want you to tell that story. I mean, I got chills listening to it there. and it was so great the way you handled it, too. So,
thank you.
It deals with social media.
It absolutely does. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that John and I have noticed consistently since we've lost Dalton, and I don't know why we didn't notice it before. Maybe we were just busy paying attention to our own child, which is what we should all be doing. But we have noticed when we go on trips and all kinds of stuff that so many families are sitting at a dinner table together and they're not even looking at each other or communicating with each other. They all have their phones out. And in one circumstance, we go to this place in Castle Rock called Golden Flame Hot Wings, and we love this place. And I had called ahead. It was Wednesday night. It's our typical wing night. And I called ahead and ordered, and the lady on the other end of the line said, okay, it'll be ready in 20 minutes. And so in 20 minutes, I ran up there to get our wings, and they weren't ready yet. And she said, oh, Ronnie, I'm so sorry. I'm so booked. See all these people here. We had a huge team come in, and I'm just trying to keep up with everything, and I'll get your stuff started. She said, but it will be about 20 more minutes. And so I kind of stood back by the door because the restaurant was packed. And I'm looking around, and at almost every table, somebody was on their phone. But at this one particular table, the entire family, all four of them, were on their phones and not even looking at each other. And I watched them in that 20 minutes. You know, it doesn't take very long to eat. In that 20 minutes, they ate their entire meal and never once said one word to each other. And by the time my order was ready and the gal at the counter called me up to get my order, I was a sobbing mess. I was a blubbering idiot. And I got up there and Marie, the gal behind the counter, says, Ronnie, oh my gosh, what happened and how can I help? And I said, I just cannot believe I've watched this family this whole 20 minutes that I've been waiting for our order. And they ate their whole dinner and they never once said a word to each other. And I was just, oh, I was so devastated. And the only thing I could think of to do was to take a couple of Dalton's Pay It Forward cards, which Golden Flame Hot Wings is so cool, and they keep them on the counter for us. And anyway, I took two of Dalton's cards, and I wrote on the back from Dalton's parents. And then I asked her for a little slip of the computer paper, and I wrote a little note to this family. And I said, you know, I would do anything in the world to have 5 minutes with my son over dinner, over dessert, whatever it would be. And I would give anything if you would put all of your electronics away and just pay attention to each other. And so I attached that with the little note and the Pay It Forward cards. And I asked Marie to to get them a dessert, and I paid for the dessert, and I said, don't bring it to them until I leave. So anyway, I went out and I left. But anyway, so I just thought it's just so important. And since then we've done that. I can't even tell you the number of times we've done that. But I just wish that people would at dinner time, you know what, put all that stuff away and pay attention to each other and talk about your highs and lows and what happened today at school and what happened today at work and teach your kids how to communicate. And I think one of the biggest problems we have today is as parents, we say all the time, how was your day? And, you know, tell me about school or whatever. And you get a one word answer, but we don't teach our kids is to ask us, how was your day, Mom? How was your day, Dad? Did you have a high today? Did you have a low today? You know, what happened in your life? Mm-hmm. And I think it's so important that we do take the time to do that, because I think as parents, we're consistently trying to show our kids that we're the big guy on campus and we can handle anything and we're so tough. And I think that it's important for us to be vulnerable as well and to let them know that we are, and to let them see us. Let them see us sweat and let them see us struggle. And you know what? If I had a really crappy day at work, Dalton and I would, you know, as John and Dalton and I were sitting down for dinner or whatever, we would talk about, you know, oh my gosh, this happened at work today and I don't even know how to handle it. I'm so stressed out. And I will tell you, one of the chapters in my book talks about this, is our kids are way smarter than we think they are. Dalton would come up with ideas like, well, Mom, if that's what's happening, then why don't you look at it this way? And it's like, oh, duh, why didn't I think of that? But here you are with a kid who has a way more open mind than we do, and we constrict ourselves so much as adults. And so many times Dalton helped me when I was struggling with something, which maybe makes me sound like an immature parent, but I will tell you, it made our relationship grow so much that he knew I trusted his opinion. I valued him and thought he was smart enough to help me with things. Yeah. So we just got to stop and have breakfast or dinner or whatever it is, but put all that crap away and just look at the person in front of you. And in anything, in a business setting, in talking to your boss, talking to a coworker, a friend, a neighbor, put your phone away and talk to them.
Yeah, there's so much in what you just said, Ronnie, and we must be sharing thoughts here when you use that word vulnerable.
Yes.
And that's risky for us as humans, you know, especially as adults, we're in control, you know, but to share a weak moment, you know, when I feel sad or I'm angry, you know, whatever it is. And, and truly express that, because, you know, you're talking about, and you come back to the idea of the meal. And we think of a family when they get together, one time they would do is over dinner. Well, that's kind of gone out the door for many, many families simply because of demands on life, and our life now is 24/7, and you got some parents working multiple jobs, you know, just to try to keep, you know, the family intact. And so that opportunity to sit down and share a meal and literally talk to each other.
Yes.
And we think about it at the kitchen table. Well, then we take it out to a restaurant. So we take it out of the home setting. That's one thing there. But it would still provide the opportunity for everyone to sit around and share the thoughts of the day. Okay, you just simply moved home to the restaurant, but carry that energy. But when they get so detached and into their little worlds of, you know, the social media, again, they're all playing on this. They're not even communicating at that point. So they're out of their home. They're not communicating. They're not talking to each other. And I'm thinking, you know, and we come into judgment here. And I'm going like, that family is somewhat dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. I could be completely wrong. I don't know. But I thought it was really powerful and on your part and courageous to send them a little message, and how they receive it is up to them.
Exactly.
You sent it in genuine kindness and, you know, and the power of that there. So I think it's wonderful you did that.
Thanks.
Yeah. You know, we got a few minutes left here, and so what are your plans? Okay, you have the book, you're talking, and you have events coming. If people wanted to reach out to you and learn more or get you to come in and talk, how do they do that?
Well, they can call me. They can go on my website. My website is parentingatyourbestwithoutregrets.com. Again, that's parentingatyourbestwithoutregrets.com. They could also email me at doitfordalton@gmail.com. Again, that's doitfordalton@gmail.com. And I answer pretty quickly on everything. So, and I would love to, if anybody has a school, a church, a parenting event, a book club, anything like that, I would love to share our story and do anything to help people just be better people to each other in the world, not just parents, but just better people in general. And because what we've seen and what we've been through, we were so lucky to have Dalton for the time that we did. But I think that our purpose now, bringing it full circle again, is sharing our story with others to help them have a better life. So while our life might be pretty empty right now, with missing Dalton, if we can in any way, shape, or form take our emptiness and help someone else feel full, I'm happy to do that in any way I can.
Well, and from my end and our end here, you know, I'm going to speak for the listening audience now, is to give back to you, you know, because your message being so powerful that, because in a heartbeat, anything can happen. And all of a sudden, your life has been upended. And I mentioned my friend Jean earlier there, losing her son. You've lost your son. And those are, you know, in accidents. And then we have those parents who deal with the loss of their child through suicide. And, you know, and the what's happening in our culture here. And to understand that we're not alone. And that, you know, we need to move forward. And, you know, you shared that moment in your life and you said it's not worth going on, but you were able to find somehow that energy. Maybe it was Dalton talking to you, saying, Mom, no, you got work to do over
exactly.
there. So, you know, I would like to think that. I think it's a wonderful thought there, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. But, very true.
But I thank you for coming in and sharing a story. It is just like, I'm getting tears and choking up. I'm sorry. I really am. You know, I'm like, wow.
Well, thank you.
And yeah, you and I have talked about it again, but it's so powerful. So, and in our transition here, in a few minutes, you know, our good friend Cheryl is going to be coming on here and talking about how we could stay fit and everything and flexible and everything past 50. And I'm going like, okay, you know, so, you know, but so we're going to do a little bit of music interlude. But you had mentioned, and interesting enough, I had picked out this song to play about how intelligent our kids are.
Yes.
And there's a wonderful song from back in the late 60s, and it's from Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
I think I do.
There we go. So teach your children well, eh?
Thank you.